It is the Taylor Report. We're going to be speaking with Zafar and sometime shortly, and I'll just tell you again the headlines are actually we're having so many Saudi headlines that 2 days ago there was everything. All the headlines were the royal. He's arrested his relatives, the various princes. Some of them really high-powered individuals.
One of them is the former crown prince before he got bumped off
crown
that position.
Prince, yeah. Yeah, the heir designate.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, what that's, oh man, you don't want to be the heir designated when there's a sort of a time frame that, and 6 months go by and they say, well, we've changed our minds. I think we're joined now by Zafar Benkash himself. Are you there, Zafar?
Yes, hello, Phil. I am with you.
Thank you. And it's crescent.icit-digital.org.
That is correct, yes.
You look up Zafar Benkash, they'll tell you that, but I want you to know that you could do it. Zafar, you seem to be very much in demand, at least in our quarters, because there's a lot going on in the region, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Turkey, the mysterious state kingdom or whatever it is, but I guess the latest, we have two issues going on here. The Saudis today, maybe they're trying to get the headlines away from the in-house struggle, but now we have them kicking the bottom out of the price of oil to the detriment of other oil-producing states. That's become the headline, but 2 days ago, and I guess it has to be still the ongoing issue, is there's a fight going on inside the House of Saud.
Yes, very much so. And this is something that I've written about extensively. In fact, I wrote about this in my book at the end of 2014. The title of the book, of course, is, as you know, The Doomed Kingdom of the House of Saud.
We've been counting it down since you wrote it.
Yes, and it seems that things are coming to
a
head.
You have to feel pretty good about this, because, you know, usually people say things like that, and they say, well, gee, you know, half a century's gone by, and I guess that book's out of date. But they really are, that the house is shaking. What's causing this?
Well, basically, you see, until 5 years ago, they had certain agreements in place that kept this family in power. The first thing was that they had the family had an agreement with the various religious groups, so they divided responsibilities between them. Secondly, the family had an agreement with the tribes, so it bribed the tribal leaders and kept them happy. And the third thing was that the family always kept their inner discussions a closely guarded secret, and they always presented a united front to the outside world, or at least to the society in Saudi Arabia. Since King Salman has taken over, and essentially it is his son, Mohammed bin Salman, who's not only the crown prince, he's the defense minister, he's also in charge of the king's office. The former secretary general of the king's office was fired in 2018, and Mohammed bin Salman has taken over completely. Now, there are many reports which say that the king is basically suffering from dementia. He doesn't know what's going on around him. So the person who is in charge of his office makes all the decisions. And since he happens to be the son of the king, therefore he can take these decisions in the name of the king, and nobody can question him. So essentially, it's Mohammed bin Salman that is running the show in Saudi Arabia. But given the fact that he is quite young, inexperienced, not very bright, there are many more Saudi princes that are far more experienced than him in terms of, because of the fact that they are much older, they have held these various positions for a very long time, and they know exactly what's going on. And what Mohammed bin Salman has done is to come and shake up all of these previous arrangements. So he has taken on the religious establishment. He has locked up a number of very, very senior religious figures that were quite respected not only in Saudi Arabia but worldwide. He's locked them up and even actually accused them of treason because some of them called for reconciliation between Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And that was considered treasonous by this young man.
Yeah. By the way, if I could just interrupt, thinking of that, this recent bloody incident where the Americans, in a fit of imperial madness, assassinated the Iranian general Soleimani, allegedly he was, I shouldn't say allegedly, according to the Prime Minister of Iraq, he was trying to mediate a discussion with the Saudis.
Yes, that is correct. In fact, it is now well established that that Iraqi Prime Minister Abdul Mahdi, he was basically carrying or acting as a go-between between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia had indicated after they found out that if they continue their hostilities towards Iran, that the Saudis' life would become much more difficult, particularly for Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, because he's also a defense minister, and he's been waging this war in Yemen. And the Yemenis, the Houthis, have been able to target a number of significant targets in Saudi Arabia itself. So, for instance, they were able to hit Aramco oil facilities very, very precisely, and it really shook the Saudi regime. Then a few weeks later, the Houthis were able to capture 3,000 Saudi soldiers in fighting on the border between Yemen and Saudi Arabia. That is another big blow to the Saudis because the Saudis are equipped with all kinds of high-tech weapons, and yet their soldiers are terrible. And the Houthis are very poorly armed. Yemen is a very poor country. And so based on these calculations, the Saudis realized, or at least Mohammed bin Salman realized, because a number of other Saudis had realized a long time ago that this war in Yemen was going nowhere. It was costing the regime billions of dollars every month. Mm-hmm. Some estimates put it at $6 billion a month. So you can see that this war has been going on for 5 years now. It mm-hmm. started exactly in March of 2015, mm-hmm. March 26, 2015. So you can see that it's been 5 years. And the Saudis have achieved none of their objectives, either military or political. And in fact, they have been humiliated. So they thought if they can quieten down the front with Iran, that would help them. So mm-hmm. they sent out a message through the Iraqi prime minister to say to the Iranians that they perhaps want, they had certain kinds of proposals. Yeah. And General Soleimani was actually carrying Iran's answer to the Iraqi prime minister.
That raises a question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's so interesting because you'd have to speculate that the Americans didn't want that discussion going forward.
That is correct.
It could be a motive.
In fact, what transpired was that the Iraqi prime minister had notified the Americans that this general was coming to Iraq and he was carrying a message from Iran, and the Americans had said, okay, that's okay, we are content with it. But I think what transpired was that definitely the Israelis were involved in it, the Americans were involved in it, the neocons, and they just used that as a pretext to lure the general to Iraq and then used their drones or helicopters to fire missiles at the convoy that was carrying General mm-hmm. Qasem Soleimani, as well as the head of the popular militia units of Iraq. Both of them were assassinated, as well as 9 other people in the 2 vehicles that they were traveling in. Mm-hmm. And thereby, the chances of any peaceful negotiations between Iran and Saudi Arabia were blown to pieces. And obviously, neither the Americans nor the Israelis would want that because
that would be a clear message to bin Salman, don't be doing that.
Exactly.
Talk about being between a rock and a hard place.
Yes. And internally, he also faces a lot of difficulties, although on this front in terms of escalating tensions with Iran, there is quite a bit of support inside the kingdom. They don't see that as a wise policy, that they should be continuing to be hostile to Iran when Iran has on many occasions indicated that they do not want conflict in the region, that they want to have regional countries look after their own securities, and there is no reason for external forces to be present over there. And there are many people in Saudi Arabia that have realized this. And so obviously this move that Iran and Saudi Arabia should tone down their rhetoric as well as tensions would have been welcomed all around. But naturally, external players like the United States and Israel are not happy with that, because they would see that then their mischievous policies would not be successful. So that's one aspect of it. But inside the kingdom, obviously, there has been a lot of discontent, particularly among senior members of the royal family, who see this young, brash man messing up things all around. As you alluded to, the oil price has just, you know, hit rock bottom. It's now at something like $34 a barrel. And that was, I think, back in the early 1990s. Now you can see that, you know, something, this price has crashed to about 20 years ago, and that obviously is going to have a very, very detrimental effect on the Saudi economy as well. If you consider the fact that on the one hand they are losing, they have lost hundreds of billions of dollars in this useless war that they have been fighting on or waging on Yemen. Their policy in Syria has virtually collapsed. Their policy in Iraq has collapsed. And they were hoping that they would be able to work out some kind of a deal with Russia to secure a cut in oil production. And the Russians just told them to go and fly a kite. They're not going to do so. So the price of oil has crashed. Now, Saudi income obviously is going to go down tremendously. It naturally would affect other oil producers as well, but it's not going to make them happy. And so if Saudi Arabia, who is primarily responsible for this situation, because the Saudis have said that we are going to increase our oil production, then that obviously is going to have a detrimental effect, and it will increase resentment against Saudi Arabia. And amid all of this, we have the situation whereby Mohammed bin Salman has struck against some of the leading figures in the kingdom, the most prominent of whom, of course, is Prince Ahmed bin Abdulaziz. Now, he is the brother, he's his actual uncle, the youngest brother of his father, the king. Mm-hmm. And they are from the same mother, the Sudairi. They are called the Sudairi Seven. So Sudairi, the one of the wives of Abdulaziz, had seven children from one wife, and Prince Ahmed is the youngest child of those seven brothers, and it was assumed that these seven brothers, since they have the same mother, that they would be close to each other, they would cooperate with each other, they would help each other. And yet Mohammed bin Salman has struck against one of those uncles. Of course, this uncle was critical of Mohammed bin Salman's policies. He had gone into self-imposed exile.
He's the one who made the remark in London that he wanted that war over yesterday.
Exactly. That's exactly the person. In fact, there was a demonstration in London against the war, and he came out and he met the demonstrators, and he told them, he said, you know, why are you condemning all the members of the House of Saud? He said, I'm a member of the House of Saud, but I oppose this war. And the demonstrators asked him, he said, well, who do you think is responsible? He said, the king and his son. He said, they're the ones that are responsible for it. He said, I'm with you. I support your demand that this war should not have been started, that this war should have been ended yesterday, not today. So, in other words, he adopted a very sensible policy. And, of course, he returned to the kingdom upon the assurances of the United States and Britain that had secured these assurances from Mohammed bin Salman, that he's not going to arrest Prince Ahmed. And when he returned to the kingdom, this was in October of 2018. At that time, of course, Mohammed bin Salman was facing this major crisis resulting from the murder of Khashoggi, Adnan Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul just a few weeks earlier, beginning of October of 2018. And it is well known that it was Mohammed bin Salman who had ordered.
Yeah, by the way, I'd have to make sure to just nail that question. These princes are not the ones who killed Khashoggi.
No, not at all. It was Mohammed bin Salman who had done it. So these other people, these other ones that he has arrested, the reports are that there are at least 20 princes that have been arrested. The names of some of them have come out in the public. One of them, of course, as I mentioned, Prince Ahmed bin Abdulaziz, the senior most. His son has been arrested, who actually was the head of the Land Forces Intelligence Department. Then the Prince Mohammed bin Naif, who was the former crown prince and who had for a very long time been the interior minister, he has been arrested. And also Mit'ab bin Abdullah, who is the son of the former King Abdullah. And Mit'ab had been the head of the National Guard for about almost 50 years. Mit'ab is in his mid-70s now. Wow. And so all of these senior figures have been arrested. The reason being that Mohammed bin Salman feels very insecure. He knows that these other princes carry a lot of weight in the kingdom. And once the king is dead, then these other princes would be able to speak out much more forcefully, and they would be able to gather the rest of the family around them, as well as major power centers in the kingdom, which of course includes the National Guard, the army, the interior ministry, and so on. So he thought if he strikes now and get rid of these people, accusing them, incidentally, of committing treason and of plotting to carry out a coup against him. These are the allegations that he has made against them. So of course, no proof is necessary. Whatever he says is the truth.
We're speaking to Zafar Benkash. By the way, his book is
The Doomed
Kingdom of the House of Saud, and it was published in 2011.
No, 2015, beginning of 2015.
Oh, that's what I get for not looking at it while I'm speaking.
Yes.
2015. So, and it is unfolding. I want to ask you, Zafar, I guess it's an obvious pedestrian question, but I'd get to you, from what you're saying, I'd have to think that this thing is not over.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, he can arrest these people. You see, whatever he does,
we're liable to see a lot of blood from the sound of it.
Absolutely. Whatever he does, Mohammed bin Salman is going to be in trouble. If he, keeps these people in prison, and of course, in the Saudi prisons, they are notorious. They torture people. They do all kinds of terrible things.
Can you imagine a prince in one of those prisons?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm starting to giggle. But that in November, the G20 is due to meet in Riyadh.
Yes. And you know, there is news
with this
that
going on.
Mohammed bin Salman, in fact, there is one news which says that he wants to become king before the G20 summit so that he can launch himself as the king of Saudi Arabia. Uh-huh. Now, of course, he's not even going to wait for his father to die.
He might have to deprive him of his porridge. They're capable of that. By the way, Zafar, we should emphasize, these guys, we talk about the head choppers, the terrorists in Syria, and everybody remarks on it. It's a culturally shocking thing that they cut off people's heads. The Saudis do that regularly.
Absolutely. They do it, and they do it in the public
to
square.
To children, they do it.
Yes, they don't hide it. They do it openly and publicly. I mean, they have executed so many people for petty crimes, and even maids that they have accused falsely of committing murder, when in fact these poor maids had done absolutely nothing. These were either Filipino maids, Sri Lankan maids.
Yes, they execute foreigners. They execute Filipinos and Ethiopians and servants.
Exactly. These very, very poor, desperately poor people, Indonesian maids and so on. These have been horrible stories, not just stories, but in fact, actual executions that have been carried out that are, totally documented, clearly documented. There have been a lot of, condemnation of these kinds of acts because, regrettably, in Saudi Arabia, the court system is, there is actually no court system. It's just so thoroughly corrupt. And I want to give you just one example. Hmm. There was one Saudi preacher, and this goes back a few years. He was a celebrity preacher. He used to give lectures on television. Favorite of the regime. One day he comes home and he accuses his, just listen to this, he accuses his 5-year-old daughter of having committed adultery. I mean, you know, it boggles the mind as to what on earth is going on in the minds of these people, mm-hmm. that he would accuse a 5-year-old girl of committing adultery. And then what he did was, he took an iron rod and he beat up this child so badly that he broke her skull as well as her back. And then he even raped her with that iron rod. And that poor girl, of course, died, 5 years old. And this preacher was arrested, and he served about a month in prison. And then when the case came to trial, the judge said, well, he has served his sentence, so I set him free. There was such an outcry in the kingdom that they said, no, this is a horror that cannot go unpunished, mm-hmm. that we really have to have this man. In fact, hundreds of thousands of people sent petitions to the king. They said, how on earth can this man be let go when he has committed such mm-hmm. a crime? And so there is a retrial of this preacher, and then he is sentenced to 10 years in prison and 100 and you're supposed to pay
100 lashes?
100 lashes and $100,000 compensation to the girl's mother, who incidentally had been divorced by this preacher before that. So the $100,000 was paid, no 100 lashes, and after a few months, the judge set this preacher free because he said that there is no evidence that he had done anything wrong. I mean, this is the kind of thing that...
So he's not allowed to have a TV show or something now.
Absolutely. That's the only punishment that he has got. That
like Woody Allen.
Yeah. You know, it sometimes boggles the mind as to what kind of people are living in that society.
And how they are embraced by the West. And we have about 3 minutes to go. I have to ask you quickly, because I think our listeners need to know that this Syria-Turkish issue is squeezing down... And there is a group there, and I read today, I saw Iranian news, and they said they have found the headquarters of a Nusra leader. But I think our listeners, they have trouble following, because I read most media are calling this group Nusra, they're calling them Sham, or Asham, I think. But at any rate, why do they keep changing their names? And I guess I have the key. There's a guy named Al-Julani.
Yes.
Is he permanent while all the other names change? Who are these guys?
Well, basically, as you rightly pointed out, Al-Nusra Front has changed its name many times. It used to be called Jabhat al-Nusra. Then it changed its name to Hayat Tahrir al-Sham or Tahrir al-Sham. And then later on became Fatah al-Sham, etc. So it keeps on changing its names because once it runs out of... positive activities or positive coverage, then it has to change its name. It assumes a new identity. Mm-hmm. And there are, of course, a number of other groups, ISIS and Free Syrian Army and Ahrar al-Sham and Jund al-Aqsa and Jaish al-Mujahideen and Jaish al-Islam. They just keep on taking these various names, although they emerge from the same group, but when they have some internal fighting, so there are two or three people that do not agree on something, so one person would go and set up another group, another person would go and set up a third group, etc.
And that's partly because they actually are losing, right? I mean, the highways are being cleared,
yes,
and even the Turks are being backed up. Last word, this agreement between Russia and Turkey, that's Turkey retreating, right?
Absolutely. Turkey had thought that it was going to get away with it, but Russia put its foot down. And even Iran and Hezbollah warned the Turkish army that your forces are attacking our fighters. You are in our sights. We don't want to hit you. But if you don't stop, we are going to hit you and hit you very hard.
Thank you. I'm afraid I have to cut you off there, but I like the language. So that's the appropriate time. Zafar Bengash. Thank you very much.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.